I should turn the key or you, Latimer?
It should definitely be you, Mum.
You still haven't said where the door leads to.
That's because I don't know, Mum.
But when you copied Pat Rothfuss's singular key, you gave the impression that you knew.
I have a very good idea of where it will take Mr. Rothfuss, Mum. I have much less idea where it will take you, should you open it.
Maybe I shouldn't.
It would be safer not to.
Oh, sod it.
Oh, dear.
Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman. There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and that you're enjoying all the beautiful rainbows we've had lately. I'm Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. Well, this countryside is very beautiful, but in all honesty, I'm not entirely sure where we are. I thought it might be England, but whilst there are rolling hills and gorgeous greenery, I don't recognise that city over there on the horizon. It looks more like a foreboding citadel than anything in the British Isles, yet at the same time, there is something strangely familiar about it. At least there's lots of space for us to spread out and take tea together. Grab a picnic rug and make yourself comfortable, for as long as there is tea and cake, all is well.
I'm sorry to disturb you, ma'am, but your guest has arrived, a Miss Victoria Schwab.
Splendid! Let's see her calling card. Victoria Elizabeth Schwab, purveyor of monsters and fine tea. Ooh, sounds like just my kind of person.
Fine tea? I'll be the judge of that.
What was that, Latimer?
Nothing, ma'am.
Show her over, then.
Very good, ma'am.
For those of you who don't know, Victoria Schwab writes YA novels, middle grade, and also books for adults. The latter includes Vicious and A Darker Shade of Magic, which came out in February, both published by Tor in the US and Titan in the UK.
Miss Victoria Elizabeth Schwab, ma'am.
Hello, Victoria. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I'm quite well. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Do sit down. Would you care for some tea?
I would love some.
And how do you take your tea?
I am that odd British-American hybrid. I take my tea the way many Americans take their coffee, just pitch black.
Okay. No lemon, no sugar, nothing.
No, I like it. I like it strong.
Oh, marvellous.
Yeah.
So I will pour. And I was wondering if you'd like to have a slice of Swedish princess cake to go with your tea.
Oh my, definitely. I've never had Swedish princess cake before.
This is my first time as well. A friend of mine told me about it online. It's like a tiered cake, but if you see that like dome on the top underneath the icing, that dome is completely filled with cream.
Oh, wonderful.
So, yeah, what's not to love?
As you say, it's all of my favourite things.
Oh, so I'll cut a slice. Don't mind the chickens in the little pen over there. They won't bother you. They like shoelaces and things, but we've kept them penned so they don't go running off into the countryside.
Oh, that's probably smart. Are they pets or are they?
Yes, they are. They're quite remarkable chickens. We'll come to that later on. So, in my invitation, I asked you to bring a curio with you. What have you decided to bring today?
Well, it's quite fitting, considering we're having tea in the country. I have brought my most special teacup. It is a very remarkable teacup.
Oh, marvellous. Now, anyone who has a special teacup immediately rises in my estimations. Is this something that helps you write?
It is. It is the only teacup that I really need. People talk about what they need to write, whether it's a bag of candy or whatever it is, a meal. For me, as long as I have a cup of tea in this particular teacup, it holds the exact right amount of tea, which is quite a lot of tea, and it doesn't get cold. And I love it so much that I've got one teacup here in Nashville and one teacup in Edinburgh, so that whether I'm in one place or the other, I always have my teacup.
I like that. Now, there are some people who are sitting a little way over there. One of them's behind a shrub. Perhaps you could describe it to them, because I don't think they can see it very well.
Oh, is very short, isn't it?
I mean,
I didn't notice it right at first, and his hair is a bit green, so it's quite... It blends in.
It does. Did you get it from a magical writing teacup shop, or was it a gift?
It was. It was originally a gift from a bookstore, actually. And so it's kind of the best of all worlds, in that it's a teacup, but it's a bookstore teacup. So it combines all of my favourite things.
Wow, and a fine heritage it has as well. That's marvellous.
Yes.
Now, you've written for young adults and for middle grade, and mm-hmm. for grown-ups.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you have a favourite kind of age bracket, or whether you love all of them equally.
You know, it's kind of been a fascinating process writing for three different groups, if you will. Even though there's a lot of crossover between young adults and adults, there's less crossover between middle graders for children's and adults. It's just, I think I love writing for children because it's so fanciful and magical. And then at the other end of that spectrum, my adult work is very fanciful and magical. And then in the middle, my young adult work is very, very dark and kind of grim. So it's kind of an adventure no matter who I'm writing for. I just try and, when I start a story, kind of let it go where it's going to go. And I kind of figure out what audience it's going to be for. I try not to figure out where on the shelf it'll fit until... of after I've written it.
Ah, that's really interesting. That was actually going to be my next question. I wondered if you approach them differently, but it sounds like you're led by story. And then do you kind of tweak to fit the market, like in the edit, or as you go along, do you figure it out?
Well, it's interesting because the books I've written for children have actually been collaborative with the publishers. So they've come to me and kind of given me a bit more guidance on that front. And then it's up to me to kind of make it what I will. My best example is I have a book called Vicious, which is one of my adult novels. It's about supervillains. And when I was first writing it, I was a young adult author only. And so my editor and my agent at the time were just, they found out I was working on this. And they're like, oh, but couldn't you make it for teens? And it just never felt right. There was something about the tone of the book. And so as soon as my editor and my agent read it, they were like, oh, no, you're absolutely right. This is an adult book. You can feel it. Even though the characters were the right age, it could have been a YA. So kind of the book for me just dictates. It's a tonal issue. It's not so much that it's about dark or light. Sometimes it's the humor for me. My humor is much darker in my adult books.
Ah, I see. Yeah, because that's something that I see coming up online and again is people saying, well, it's a YA book because the character is a teen. And it's like, no.
Not at all. I just think it's there's a volume in YA. There's a sense that when you're 16, no matter whether you actually are fighting for the world or you're just trying to survive high school, it feels very life or death.
Mm.
You know, there's an intensity. And then my adult books, they're funny, but they're funny in kind of that sick humor way that I don't think you get at 13. I think that's something you pick up by the time you finish your secondary school.
When secondary school has made you jaded and twisted.
Exactly.
Yes, I understand that perfectly.
This tea is fabulous, by the way. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Well, we should thank Latimer and this teapot. It is a magical teapot of perfect tea plus five. It's a splendid thing.
It's wonderful. I wish I had one of them.
It's the only one, I think, in existence. I had to go on a quest for several months to get to it that was quite arduous. So,
It was worth it.
It was worth it, yes. I can safely say that it was worth it. Something I've seen you blog about is something I'm really curious about, which is your star stickers system with your calendars. Could you tell me a bit more about that?
Of course. Basically, I'm five. I think every child out there likes earning stickers. They basically, it's a good reward system. A lot of kids in school in the States will have sticker calendars in their classrooms or something to show behavior. So I was having a really hard time focusing, and I was losing, when you're a full-time writer, if you're not careful, you can lose track of time. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden you look up and it's the next month and you're not quite sure what you've accomplished or how you zoned out for 30 days. Or if you've been under deadline, it can just eat your life. So I basically got a calendar, just like a basic month calendar, and I went online and I got some stickers, some stars in various colors. And so at the beginning of each month, I make a key system in the corner of my calendar. So I usually do a purple sticker for 500 words written and a red sticker for one scene edited, and then a yellow sticker for exercise because it's very important to me, and a green sticker for 100 pages read. So I try and then every day earn at least three stickers. So it just keeps me accountable. So there are times when I'm not going to always earn a huge number of writing stickers, but I try to make sure I read 100 pages a day. I try to make sure I exercise almost every day. And so it's just a good way to kind of make sure that time doesn't escape from you. And it's very satisfying. I don't know.
Oh, wow. I was a huge fan of gold stars at school. I think.
Yeah, you should try this. Yeah. Really, it's addictive. People think, oh, well, it's not really a reward system. I don't really get much out of it. It's incredibly addictive.
No, the stars are the reward.
Exactly. It's a reduced sense of self-loathing. That's the reward.
Oh, this is really appealing to me. I may well have to try that. One of my most excellent friends makes calendars every year, so I've got a calendar that would be perfect for this.
Yeah.
Ah, yes, I think I will try that. But 100 pages a day. Wow. Yeah.
I'm also a student, and so it doesn't count academic reading that I have to do. I try and do it because I really, truly believe that, you know, reading is one of the most important things for writing. And it's not just from a craft study perspective. It's from a refilling the creative well.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I can do as much and focus as much and be as creative if I'm not reading and kind of taking in. And so I, my goal for this year was to read 100 books, because previous years I've maybe done 30 to 40. And I'm so far I'm at like 60 books for the year, and it's only halfway through, so it's worked well.
Heavens.
And I feel more creative.
Wow, that is incredible. I think that's one of the things that's so joyous about a fantastic book and also the very best television and film, is that it's not only satisfying, but you can feel it filling you back up.
Oh, exactly. When I go to a good movie, I walk out of the movie theater and I immediately want to go write.
Yes.
You know, you're just like, oh, that was so inspiring. It can be, for me, one of them was like the first Avengers film. I walked out and I was like, that was such a blast. I want to go right now. It doesn't have to be something incredibly intense, but it just sparks something in you. And sometimes you read a book and it's so good, or it's just got that kind of tone to it where it just makes you want to go pick up your pen.
Mm, yes, I agree. There are also some books as well that are so fabulous it makes me want to give up as well. But
there are certain books I'm not allowed to read, or certain authors I'm not allowed to read if I'm writing or if I'm editing the first draft, because I just know that it will be so horribly depressing for me.
I know what you mean. And even though you know that you're reading a book which is like draft 10,
It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter at all. Even though you know that, you know, your book is going to get better, it still doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Those demons, they like to feed on whatever they can. If you could have any fictional character as your willing slave, who would it be and why?
Well, that's very enticing, isn't that? I'm imagining my bookshelves in my mind and trying to decide who I would call upon. It's such a fascinating thing because, you know, I tend to, when I'm reading, I'm so into the world that I focus less. You know, there's a character from Megan Wayland Turner's series, The Thief, Eugenides, and he's one of my favorite characters ever, and I think I would love to have him. I think he would be a delightful, I won't call him my slave, a delightful accompaniment to my entourage, you know?
I'll
have an entourage.
Yes, why have a willing slave when one can have an entourage?
Exactly.
So what is it about him that's so appealing?
You know, he's got a little bit of sass, and he's delightful, and he's delightfully intelligent, and he's brave, and he's one of the most well-rounded characters I've read in a very, very long time. Those books, the Thief and then the King of Atelier and the Queen of Atelier, they're the books you just want to kind of disappear into. They're the best kind. And he's the kind of character where I look forward to the scenes he's in, you know?
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
So you have a magical writing teacup for each of the cities you live in. So do you swap? Do you, like, live in one city for some months and then live in another city for some months?
So I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. My mum's English, though, so I spent a lot of time in England. And I'm in a graduate program at University of Edinburgh in Scotland. And it's a one-year program, but I've just come home for the summer, aside from us having tea here. But I'm not done with my program yet. So my teacup is sitting there still in my Scottish flat. And I also have my teacup here in my Nashville flat. My goal in a couple of years is to be splitting time between the two cities, because my heart belongs equally to both.
Oh, that sounds like that could be quite a tough thing, having a heart that belongs in two places.
I know, but luckily my teacup is kind of like an emotional turnkey for me. It helps me move back and forth between the two, so they both feel like home when I walk in the door of either place and suddenly my teacup is just sitting on the counter waiting for me. It's kind of like a continuity thread.
That's nice. Somebody asked a wonderful question on Twitter about this, and he'd like to know if living in another country changes your literary voice in any way when you swap between the two.
You know, it's interesting. I don't think it does, but it's mostly because I've always written a bit more with an English literary voice. People meet me, and they're always very surprised that I don't have a strong English accent, because when I write both online and in my books, I think it comes off as a stronger English accent. So I think that it's already there. I'm inspired by the places that I live, but I don't think they change my literary voice because I'm still the same person.
Mm.
They might change, they might inspire a setting or a character, but it doesn't change the way that I write. No.
Mm.
It's a good question, though.
I thought so. There was another good question that I liked as well. This is from Run Along Womble, which is one of my favourite Twitter handles. The question is, what type of magical coat would you have?
Oh, goodness. So in A Darker Shade of Magic, which is my newest book, Kel, the main character, has a coat of infinite sides. It's the outerwear equivalent of a room of requirement. It just changes based on what he needs. And I designed that specifically because that is completely the kind of coat I would like to have. I very, very much have an outerwear fetish. I prefer the colder months of the year. I know it's a bit of a cheat answer because it's an every coat you could possibly need inside of one coat, but I think that it would be hard for me to pick any other coat but his.
I think so. So I wanted to ask about A Darker Shade of Magic. That came out in February, didn't it?
Yes, it just came out. So it's just been out for about 4 months, which, as you know, as a writer, it's weird because you live in the past 2 years of publication and in the future 2 years of publication. You almost never live in the current year of publication. So it feels like it's been out forever for me, but it's only been on shelves for 4 months.
Yeah, and it has the most fabulous cover.
Oh, thank you so much. Will Stolle does the American covers for it. He does Michael Chabon and so many other authors, too, and they're just incredible. And then the UK covers are designed in-house, and I love them. I love both covers. I have these posters that have one cover on one side and one cover on the other because I couldn't decide which one I love more.
That's true, because I remember seeing both covers and thinking, oh, well, I actually love both, and that's quite rare when it comes to UK and US covers.
Definitely. They're very different, usually, the aesthetics.
Very much so, and I'm always endlessly fascinated by that, trying to figure out what it is about choices for each of the markets, you know, what went into it. Were you privy to any of that?
No, not at all. They just send me a cover. They're like, this is your cover. But it's fascinating because Vicious, which came out before that one, was my first adult book. The covers for US and UK are so vastly different, and they were very clearly catering to different markets. Because the US cover is an illustrated cover by a very, very wonderful illustrator who does editorial pieces for The New Yorker and all these kinds of things. And so I knew they wanted to go for kind of an elevated comic book style.
Mm.
Whereas, meanwhile, the UK Vicious cover looks like a movie poster. It looks like Thriller. And so it's just fascinating that they appeal to such different audiences.
Mm, yes. And A Darker Shade of Magic was on tube posters, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wow, how did that feel?
It was crazy. I was living in Edinburgh at the time, and nobody told me in advance, right? So on release day, nobody at Titan, my publisher, told me. And then on release day, all of a sudden the Titan staff starts posting photographs from the tube stations being like, happy release day, Victoria. And I was like, oh my God. So I hop on a train. You know, I was supposed to be doing school stuff, but I was like, well, I feel like I should get a pass.
Yeah.
And I hop on a train and I went down to London for the day and just kind of stood in front of them. They were in 5 different tube stations. I was one of the most magical things that I've ever seen. It was so unexpected.
It's so, so brilliant. I think that's one of the things that I'm thinking about when you kind of have a transition from being a reader and fan all of your life to becoming a professional author.
Yeah.
That there are certain critical moments, like milestones.
That was one of
those
moments.
I was going to ask if that was one of your kind of critical milestones.
So that was one of them. And then the next one came about a month later, which was I was lucky enough to do a Waterstones event with Deborah Harkness, who is the Discovery of Witches author, and it was a sold-out event, and so I was like, well, I mean, guaranteed everybody is here for Deborah, right? I mean, she's an international bestseller, and we ended up signing books for almost exactly the same amount of time, and I turned to her when it was over, and I was like, that was amazing, because I'm so used to being the newbie author, it's just a rite of passage. When you do a panel, you finish first. Like, you finish signing books first, and that's totally fine. But it's just kind of a fascinating moment when the time that you finish signing is not so far off from the time that, you know, one of your heroes finishes signing.
Yes. Yes, and I think that's the important thing to remember, both as a writer and also for readers as well, that we are just people who loved books. And then we were lucky enough to be picked up, and that all of these experiences, we're still that same person who loved books and always wanted it. And it's really hard to realize it's happening to us.
Oh, it's amazing. It's like when editors or publishers will send me books to read, and I'm like, I'm still a reader, right? So I'm like, oh my God, people are sending me free books. And it's like, well, you're an author now. Like, they want you to read them. And I was like, I don't care. This is amazing, you know? I go to the conferences where you're given free books, and the reader in me is just so excited.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned the chickens earlier, and the reason I didn't tell you too much about them before is because they have a bit of a party piece.
Oh, no.
And
I should say.
It's not a bad one, don't worry. They're actually quite remarkable chickens. They're very talented. They're singing chickens.
Really?
Yes, and what they do is they sing any tune that I can think of and ask them to sing, and, you know, they've had a 100% success rate so far. So what I've taken to doing is that when I have a guest over to take tea with me, I like to ask my guest what would be the theme tune of their life and see if the chickens know it. So I'd like to ask you, if you could pick one tune that expressed your life, what would it be?
Well, hopefully the chickens will know this one because it's a Beatles song, and I feel like all chickens, all singing chickens anyway, should be well-versed in the Beatles. But for me, it's going to seem a bit odd because it's less about the lyrics, it's more about the beat. For me, it's Come Together by the Beatles. It's just one of those songs that is always... I've loved it. I've loved it since I was a kid, and it's about the beat, it's about the rhythm, and every single time I've heard it, it just puts a little bit of swagger in my step. And I think when I'm having a bad day, it makes me feel better. When I'm having a good day, it makes me feel rather awesome. So I think it would be like the soundtrack that I would want if I was walking slow motion down the street with like a fabulous coat billowing behind me.
And your entourage.
Exactly, and my entourage. So I think it would be Come Together.
Marvellous. Okay, then, little chickens, could you sing Come Together by the Beatles for Victoria, please? And there they go. Well, they do know that tune, of course, as you said, you know, of course they should know the Beatles.
That was amazing.
It's always a bit of a shock for my guests when the chickens start to sing, but a pleasant one, I'd like to
think. I'm quite envious. None of my pets can sing. My pets are just rather useless. I mean, they're adorable, but none of them have such talent.
I'm very lucky. So, I'm afraid the teapot is empty.
Oh, no.
Oh, so I'm afraid it's probably time for us to go home. But I would love to see you again, and I just wanted to say thank you so much for dropping by to take tea today.
Absolutely, it's been such a pleasure.
So if you would just like to follow Latimer the butler, he'll take you back through the magical door, and
okay.
I will see you online back in our neck of the woods, because I'm not, the longer we've been sitting here, I'm not entirely convinced that we are actually still in England. I think we may be somewhere else. I think I have a feeling I know what that city is in the distance, but that's not for us to worry about now.
Well, it's been a lovely countryside.
It is quite beautiful here. So do take care, and I will see you soon.
All right. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
This way, Mum.
Latimer, that city over there, it does look very familiar. Do you recognise it?
No, Mum. In fact, I can't say that anything about this place is familiar. It's an oddity, as if someone had taken lots of different worlds and stitched them together. The more I think about it, the more disturbing it seems.
You mean you haven't actually been here before? I think that must be a first.
No need to rub it in, Mum.
Perhaps that person over there, the one approaching Victoria at the crossroads, could help us.
The one with tentacles instead of lips, Mum?
What? Heavens to Betsy, that's a mind flayer! I didn't think they were real.
This one certainly appears to be. And I don't think he's trying to talk to Miss Schwab. I believe he's trying to feast on her brain.
Well, that's just not cricket.
But very understandable, given the brain.
But she needs it. And you know, I think that mind flayer is familiar as well. Oh, wait a minute, I know where we are. The door has taken us into Adrian Tchaikovsky's D&D campaign world. That city over there is Carceron. And I know just what to do with this mind flayer.
Mum?
It's not working! Why can't I fireball him in the face?
It's probably just as well, Mum, seeing as a fireball has a large area effect.
Oh yes, I remember now, but I'd still like to be able to do it.
The door may have taken us into Mr. Tchaikovsky's world, but it has not given you draconic heritage, Mum, or the sorcerer's powers that come with it. However, as luck would have it, Miss Schwab is quite resourceful, and appears to have a working relationship with a voodoo deity.
Is that what that pouch is for?
Yes, Mum. I believe she's summoning Papa Legba, King of the Crossroads. I wonder what she'll sacrifice to him. Hopefully not us.
Oh no, it's even worse than that. She's given him her special teacup.
Presumably her soul was given away some time ago. Interesting. It looks like he's coming, Mum. Best look away.
I can't even do a bloody firebolt. This is intolerable.
And there we have it. Papa Legba has trapped the mind flayer in a handy-sized glass vial for safekeeping. How considerate of him.
Is it safe now?
Miss Schwab is just going through the door as we speak, Mum.
I think we should go too, Latimer. Carceron is the most awful place. It's run by an evil tyrant and demonic priests and is full of undead and all kinds of evil people.
It doesn't sound too bad. After all, we've survived Professor Elemental's house.
No, trust me, Latimer. It's not the kind of place someone should go without sorcerous powers, a very strong and slightly stupid paladin, and an elf who's a damn good shot with a bow.
Those are highly specific needs, Mum.
I know. Pack up the tea things before the tyrant notices us. Whilst Latimer is packing the tea things away, I would like to raise my teacup to Brandon Stenger and Matthew, the newest members of the Order of the Sacred Teacup. Should you wish to join the esteemed order and discover how Latimer became my butler, go to www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy. All done, Latimer? Splendid. I do have just one question. If the key brought us through to Adrian's game world, where would it have taken Patrick Rothfuss? I don't understand.
Well, Mum, it appears the door takes the user to wherever one wishes to go.
Oh, yes, I have been jonesing for D&D lately, so I suppose that's why we came here. Oh, well, find us a new tea lair, would you, Latimer? Preferably somewhere I haven't role-played in.
Very good, Mum.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman and co-written with Peter Newman. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find previous episodes and www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy to become a Bless Poppet.